Welcome to Took Talk, a video podcast by the band Took, and brought to you by Black Frog Media. We chat with the best in the music industry from yesterday and today, with a focus on the good old days of Canadian rock. This episode originally streamed live on Tuesday, July 20th, 2021 on Facebook Live. Now, here are your hosts, Todd, Brent, Shane, Corey, and Darren.
Welcome to Took Talk. Today, it's just me. I'm your host for today. Let's bring in the other guys. But I am in charge of the controls.
As you best Took Talk ever.
Yeah, best damn Took Talk ever.
A2. I thought that the whole time, I thought the ending of that song was A2, like, A2 Brutus. A little bit of, what do you call it?
William Shakespeare?
Yeah, I'd be a little bit of, what do you call that? Latin, I guess.
Macbeth? Was it Macbeth A2, or Hamlet?
Oh, you mean like E-T-U-D-E, the word, you mean?
Yeah,
like,
A2 Brutus. A2, that's from Julius Caesar, the legendary play. But I was going to say, are we ever going to release that song? People keep asking, where can I get that song? I go, well, you can't. You can listen to it every Tuesday on Took Talk. But beyond that, maybe we should have it as a secret hidden track on the next CD if we ever get to that point. If we ever get to doing a compact disc or whatever.
Or write a whole song. Just, 3 minutes of Took Talk. Which would mean a decent guitar solo and whatnot.
And the verses would be like a Monday, I'm just chilling. Or no, I have to guess. I have to go Wednesday, and then work your way all the way around, and then go, and then
just
of course,
chilling Thursday, like a villain.
And Friday, still fucking waiting, and Saturday, and then just keep working all the way around, and then the chorus is always Took Talk Tuesday.
Yeah. Boy, this,
I think that's
so we live for.
And so yeah, creative to the end.
So we got a cast here today.
Yeah, we got a lean and mean cast today, which is okay.
Yeah, we trimmed off the fat.
Yeah, poor Shane. He's always just like the brunt of it. That he who is not here will get the brunt of it. Yeah,
that's right.
Shane is got a good reason for not being here. He's going on a nice little holiday adventure.
He's always on
somewhere
nice
very exotic.
Adventures. Yeah,
must be nice.
Not sure how I feel about that.
Yeah,
out of sheer jealousy, I'm kind of stewing in it. But then Darren's got stuff going on, so.
So just the three of us.
Mm-hmm. Just the three of us.
Three of us.
I'm gonna turn us on the old phone here so I can follow along with the kids at home.
Oh yeah, where's the comments? Oh yeah, over there.
Yeah, I don't know how to turn the comments on for you guys. I can see them.
I see it. For you, I got guys. It on the side here.
You got them?
How do you do that?
Yeah.
Click on the comments thing on the right there, Todd.
Look at this.
You see that,
Todd? You don't even need to do on your phone.
Oh yeah, then you can actually pay attention to what's going on here.
Well, there's a whole bunch of us already. Okay. Let's just...
I see Don. Yeah. I see Mike. Price.
Susie and Brian and Gloria and Kim and Music Junkies and Tina and Marlene.
And Megan.
Megan.
And
Don, Greta, Christy, Chantel, Alf. Is that Alf like the
of
alien
course, Buenos
that
Buenos Aires
cats?
Alf.
Yeah, of course, that's Buenos Aires Alf, yeah.
Yeah,
and a whole bunch more.
And I see you too
Mike
on the Romper Room.
Mike Price from Vancouver. And Romper Room, exactly.
Is that a Canadian only show? I
think it's a Canadian only show.
I don't know.
Romper Room was television show for children. If anybody has any comment on whether that was international or just Canadian, please let us know. I think it's just Canadian.
Hmm. Yeah, and at the end of the show, everybody waited to hear the lady looked in the mirror. And her magic mirror, and she was looking to see who was out there, and you waited for your name to be called. And of course, it never got called. At least mine didn't. Corey wasn't a very popular name.
Yeah, I think it was, in retrospect,
really?
it was a big ruse.
No.
It was a big ruse because it was probably just very generic names, wasn't it? Like
Megan
Michael
thinks it's US and UK.
Oh, really? Well, let's check. Okay. You know what? If only I had a machine that we could H&R. Let's see.
There we go.
Room.
I think it might have crossed over into the States too, actually.
I'm sure it might have been carried on some sort of check it out. Romper Room is an American children's television series that was franchised and syndicated from 1953 to 1994. Wow, that's a hell of a run. That's 41 years. There you go. So it was American made, but it was franchised internationally at various times in Canada, United Kingdom, Japan, Finland, New Zealand, Puerto Rico, and Australia. Wow, there you go. So don't act like you'd, but mind you, it was then, a thousand.
And you know what happened? The mirror broke, and that's what caused the demise of the series.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Well, that's 7 years of.
Suddenly it turned into a Black Mirror episode.
That's what it became. Romper Room turned into Black Mirror.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. No. There you go.
Newman. Hey, Newman's on.
Uh-oh. Everybody be cool.
Newman.
All right.
So any further, are we talking about anything today? Releases?
Yeah, we are,
shows?
Actually.
Are we talking
we
about?
We have a.
Corey, let her rip.
We have what? What?
Yeah, let her rip.
About
let
the, okay. I think that's a Canadian reference, meaning for.
Yeah, because I've already forgot the date, but we have a release date for our new single and video.
Uh-oh.
Which will be August the 10th.
August 10th, so 4 days before the Edmonton show, you'll get a release of the new single, Up to You, by the fine, friendly fellas. Hey, Murph Fitz is on here now. Uh-oh.
Hey, Murph.
Look out. Shit. Lock up your daughters. Murph Fitz is here.
We do have to get our parents on one day. That would be freaking hilarious.
We do. We should have a parents episode.
That would be hilarious. Well, your dad, Corey's dad, actually played on our record, or on one of the records.
He did.
Yeah, he played harmony.
Don't It Make You Feel, right?
Guitarmony on Don't It Make You Feel. Yeah.
Guitarmony, yeah. Exactly.
Guitarmony.
Yeah.
Get our parents pretty to epic. Sing gang vocals or something.
Yeah, we should get him on the next one.
So when we do that version of Wasn't It a Party by the Rovers, then we'll get our parents.
That's my dad's favorite song.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everybody should YouTube that song right now. Or better yet,
definitely
call it up on your streaming services.
I think we brought it up before on Tube Talk. So
I think so. It's a classic. The Rovers were Irish band. Irish band via Canada, I believe.
They were Irish Rovers, and then they got super hip as the Rovers.
The Rovers, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of like the Bay City Rollers when they became the Rollers,
right?
Which was the less popular version.
Yeah.
So we got our single releasing August 10th. Okay. So wow, that's. I'm gonna take a look at my calendar. How many days away is that? Oh, my cat is trashing the place.
If that's a Tuesday, Corey,
that's
a Tuesday.
That's in 1, 2, 3 weeks from now. From today. It's okay. He can.
Hey, Cindy Cruz wants to know: are you playing it in Edmonton? And the answer is: question.
We probably should.
We should.
Would you like us to? Yeah. Of course we should.
Yeah. If you like the song, we'll play it. Of course you.
And we expect. With 4 days' notice, everybody should know the words by that time, right?
Exactly. Just hold the mic out like, you sing!
You sing it!
Vince Neil would do that. Let's be honest. Vince would do that. He wouldn't play it. Yeah. Hey, Andrew White, August 10th, new Tuke singles and videos. Up to you. Woohoo.
Woohoo!
Okay. Good job.
Andrew, of course, is our front of house guy.
Sound guy, tour manager.
He also does all our notes for us on Tuke Talk.
He's a really, the behind the
really good guy.
He does amazing work collecting information for us to ask questions. Without him, this thing would be, so who are you and why are you here?
Yeah. Well, most people we know. It's just nice to have a little cliff notes, you know, somewhere close by.
Yeah. But it's always funny because I'll always read those and I'll always be, oh, wow, I didn't know that or I forgot about that.
Totally.
Or whatever. You know, it's like,
yeah,
really like who was it that was born in Moose Jaw? And we're like, born in Moose Jaw?
I forgot.
Which guess was that? Right. And none of us had any clue. Yeah, I forget. Too.
A lot of Saskatchewan references, but not today. Today it's all BC.
Yeah,
it's all West Coast entirely.
That's
it's
right. Kind of... What's happening today, Brent?
Well, am I on to? What do you mean?
Well, because you have a connection to our guest today.
Oh, yeah.
I'm happy to do the intro.
Can we bring him on?
I can.
Yeah,
why not?
Todd's always good at intros, but I mean, I'll share it with because, Todd.
Yeah, you have connected.
Yeah, so
you
our guest today.
Todd.
Yeah, I'll feed Todd. Our guest today, me personally, having some history because we played in the same band together. And and we would probably say that, theory came from Delta BC, right?
That's
so,
right, Delta.
Not the most
which
common.
Which is basically kind of an outskirts of Vancouver, just so anybody, I think, isn't it? I don't know. I've never been there.
Yeah, like a suburb of.
Yeah.
So probably the greatest thing to come from Delta, BC. So our guest today, Tyler Connolly, is probably, I want to say he's definitely one of the triple threats. I always use the term triple threat because everybody on Tuke Talk today that's on is a triple threat, meaning a great musician, a good singer, and also knows how to write songs and also a pretty damn good hang. So that's actually a quadruple threat. But
and can really threaten people very well.
That's threaten people.
Yeah,
exactly. But yeah,
he's the best hair in rock and roll. Let's be honest, ladies and gentlemen, make some noise for Tyler Conlon. All right,
definitely.
TC.
Woo! Yeah.
Yeah. There.
Welcome. Hi, Tyler.
Ooh, that's a
I'm ready, guys. You ready?
One, yeah, one yeah, two.
Good, right. Were we doing it?
You lead us off.
What were we transposing to in the third
You're
verse?
You're my wonderwall.
I always like to play that on the road again.
Do it.
On the road again.
Yeah.
That's a good one, yeah.
I was making music with my friend. I can't wait to get on the road again.
On the road again.
It goes day, right? Yeah. What was his guitar called?
On the highway. Trigger. Yeah, I think he called Trigger. Didn't he name him Trigger?
Trigger.
Yeah.
With all the famous like holes in it from just years of playing. It literally had, you know, strumming holes.
Yeah. And people have signed it and stuff like that. Yeah, it's the same guitar he's had the whole time.
Tyler, that guitar. Go ahead.
I was watching a video on YouTube of his guitar tech cleaning and taking apart Trigger. And just all so old and beat up. I don't know. He was cleaning all the frets, and it's disgusting. I mean,
I would love that. The rig rundown for Willie Nelson. It's like a full rig rundown. Yeah. Well, this is the guitar, and it's got six strings. So it's like a 5-minute rig rundown.
It kind of does this a lot.
Yeah. Hey, Ty, your J200 that you just had there in your hand, you know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of early mornings on tour together at radio stations many times we would hit at 6 a.m., get off the bus and do a morning show, Boston, you name it, somewhere in America. But, I mean, talk about working overboard. You know, people don't always understand, not just the gig, but then you're going on tour because you're, you know, you've always, you know, you're meeting radio programmers and stuff because they're playing your tunes. But, right? I mean, it's a whole other thing.
Oh. Yeah, you get up, the radio, the label rep picks you up at the bus at 8:30 a.m. for the morning show. And, of course, the morning show people are, they're on like cocaine. They're like, all right.
I know.
You went to bed at like 3 a.m. And then you're in there and they're like, leave the damn ads in here. They're going to do one of their songs. This is what here's called. What's it called? Santa Rosa. No, we're like Santa Monica. Santa Monica. Here we go. And it's just like, Dave's just like.
I know.
And I'm just like, she feels my. It's just terrible.
I know. Singing before noon is always like, really, dude? Like everything sounds like Tom Waits.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Exactly.
We would go to those, like, not just radio stations, but if it was a little even higher corporate thing, like
Best Buy
headquarters, Target, and you would go to these corporate offices. Of course, it's all done through management, so it's not like the band's going, we can't wait to do this, but it's an obligation. And you go to a conference room at the Best Buy headquarters, right, with a bunch of people with coffee and donuts. Really? And they want you to, like,
wow. And they're all suits. They're all suits, and then it's so stuffy, and then of course they've got some sort of setup for you, or they don't, and you're all in those chairs that have the arms, and you can't play the guitar in it, and you're dropping down, and you're going up, and you're dropping down, and you're playing the chairs slowly.
So is there
some sideways on the chair?
Is there even a microphone or something like that, or is this straight up campfire, like just singing?
No.
Oh wow!
Campfire crap.
I appreciate
it. You gotta do, man.
I got a Walmart employee, like, you know, thing that you wear. Remember, we did a Walmart promo or something, and we actually had to go. Oh, no, you have to have official Walmart, you know, like name tags and everything. Right. And
I remember doing that. That was back when that was the stuff you had to do to get the when your CD was on the front. What was that called?
Front racked.
It was the front rack where people walk in and they. I used to go in all the time on days off. I go to a mall I go to the music shop, and I would find our CDs, and I would put them in front of like Britney Spears and
Well Done,
and all, and I had this like it was like $4.99 on sale. Just like I fuck it.
Exactly,
that was the trick. I'm like, man, we sold a lot of CDs at Moose Jaw last night.
Yeah,
I know, because it's like often that's the funniest thing about being on. People don't understand the actual nuts and bolts and feet on the ground business of doing that, because you're going from town to town, you're shucking and jiving, shaking hands, kissing babies, going to the record shop, hoping that, you know, because sometimes you go into, I don't know about you, but I've gone into record stores and it's like, if there is our record even in there, it's somewhere hidden in some sort of bizarre, and it'll just be like under like the alphabetical situation, like Age of Electric, Bargain under Day, right? A somewhere. And it's like, oh, here it is. Yeah. Like one of them, you know?
Well, Tyler, because of HMVs over in Europe, and we've all, Todd and I are always shopping in HMV, and we still like to go to record stores, but we would always see all the Theory of a Dead Man in the metal, like we're talking metal section.
Yeah.
And I think I used to send you photos. I'm like, oh, look, you're right beside Cannibal Corpse and all this stuff.
Yeah. Deicide or something. Like,
yeah, you got Meshuggah. Yeah, Deicide.
And
Theory of a Dead Man. Like, yeah, make up your mind. Yeah.
Like, no, so I hate that they have to categorize it.
Dead men and corpses are very similar, right? So.
True.
Well, that's what they probably do. They're like, well, those cannibals and those dead men. Well,
Theory of a Cannibal.
Scary.
Dead man corpse. Yeah, yeah.
Have you officially, is it Theory for all advertising now when you do like most promo for the band? Can, like, even on an album cover, would it be just Theory or?
Yeah. Okay. So we do, on the album, it would say Theory. But like, honestly, like, radio stations and especially promoters, they don't like it because they think people, you have to try to restart, and like the promoters does not want to put Theory on a thing. They'd be like, what is that? And they're like, no, we have to put, we don't care. We're like, put Theory in, man. We want people to buy tickets. We don't want people to be confused, but we just liked the Theory thing. We thought, our label tried to get us to do it in 2008, we were like, never, never, that's our name, man.
Eventually.
Yeah, never. Because we're like, we're having trouble at,
later.
Win me over.
Later on, we'll do it.
Work for it.
Yeah, exactly.
But well, like, we're having trouble at crossover with the dead man part. We're like, who cares, man? Now we're like, yeah, we get it. Now, okay.
Yeah. Well, Theory's are really cool. Like, just on its own is a really cool name. It's funny. So how long have you been employing just Theory then? Like, when did you drop? Well, not drop it necessarily, but step away from Of a Dead Man.
Sixth record, I think, sixth album, we just called it Theory. Mm. So the last two records, which have had more of a more musical, you know, outside, not as heavy.
Yeah,
I started playing piano on a lot of the songs. It was actually so much fun live to sit down at a piano.
That's so
and
cool.
Play.
Did you grow up playing? Really did you grow up playing piano, or is this something you've incorporated in, down the line? Along the way?
My dad played piano, like he still does. He's an amazing piano player, and
organ too, right? Right? Didn't he have organs?
Organ. Yeah.
Yeah.
He'd have the Leslie. He had all that stuff. So I was spoiled as a kid because we had all this. My dad had the JX3P, so he'd be like, he'd have one over here in a full
sweet
jump. He actually even knew how to play the intro, the 1984, you know, before it goes into jump. He had all those sounds.
Yeah,
and he would do it all, and he'd have like a Roland 707 before the 808.
Yeah,
and he would like, you know, and so he would trigger it all. He'd be like, it was a one man band, but I never played keyboards. I thought maybe it wasn't cool enough. I don't know, I was a kid, so I didn't care. I don't know, but. I didn't. Once I got into it, I'm like, this is actually, it's way cooler to write songs on a piano. I just the voicings and stuff. I'm like, man, that's a really cool note.
Yeah,
I don't know. For some reason, playing a G chord, I'm getting funny. I always go to the same blues notes now. I'm kind of like looking for something else.
I think that's true. Actually, if you start writing on other instruments, you'll find a whole new sort of bag of tricks there.
Yeah.
Put things together. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So that brings up an interesting thing, though, about your father playing music. Was that, but that didn't really grab you until later on, right? The actual musical bug?
Yeah. I mean, I was a kid. My friends would come over and I had a whole basement full of, you know, we had a drum set,
really?
And guitars and stuff. And my friends would come over and be like, this is amazing. And I'm like, who cares? Yeah. I didn't care. I never cared. It was so weird. But yeah. Then I tell you, man, it was the link. It was girls. It was something to do. As soon as I hit like 14.
That'll do it.
And like my friends all could play Tragically Hip, or they could play, you know, Sunday Bloody Sunday from U2.
Okay. Wow.
Once you hit like 14, every one of your friends could play something on guitar. Yeah. And the girls were like, whoa. And then you could see them magnetized. Any dude with a guitar, they're like, wow. And I was like, all right, okay. That was it.
I know. It's funny. It really takes you away from being just a regular dude. And, oh, well, he's a regular dude that can play the three chords to Sunday Bloody Sunday. So
yeah,
he's clearly better than the average guy now.
Tyler, yeah. You must have figured out like lessons or something, because if not, everybody here knows you are a really good guitar player. That maybe you don't always.
Let me show you.
Yeah. Come on. I've seen you, and I know you really well. And you do have a lot of guitar skill that, you know, I'm just saying, look, chords and writing songs is one thing, but you actually know how to like shred pretty good. Not that you need to, but you had to learn that somewhere.
Yeah, I took lessons for a bit. I kind of learned myself. Oh, and then once it got to a certain point, I went and took lessons, and it's a kind of a cool story because all my friends took lessons from this guy named Whitey, and he was like this kind of surfer dude, long hair. And I remember at this place called R&R Music Center, and there was this little shop in Delta. It was the only place in Delta music store, but it was more like, you know, like band instruments. You go in there and get a reed for your clarinet or something. They had violins and stuff, but in the back they had lessons. And my friends all took lessons with this guy named Whitey. I'm like, I want to get lessons from Whitey. So I signed up and I went there and I went in the room and it was some guy named Derek. I'm like, where's Whitey? And they're like, oh, I'm your coach, actually. Did you want to get Whitey? He's not available. I'm like, nah, sorry. But I lucked out because, I mean, I didn't know Whitey at all, but this Derek guy, Derek Jensen, was like this phenomenal guitar player. And he was just, was so, like, he could just play anything classical. And he was like a huge Eddie Van Halen freak. So me and him actually became like best friends, and he would give me a lesson, then we would hang out on the weekend and jam.
Cool.
And so I was lucky. I was lucky I didn't get Whitey, whoever that was.
Whoever that is.
Wherever he is now. Thank you, Whitey, for being too busy to take me. Yeah.
So who were your guys? Like, who were the bands or players that made you go, I want to do that? I mean, other than the guys at school or the guys that you knew, the real people. But
Well, in bands? Well, Jimmy Page.
Right.
Was number one. That was...
I'm not familiar with him. Just kidding.
He was in this band called Queen.
They did an album called Sabbath Bloody Sabbath.
Yeah. They were from London, Ontario. Yeah, Jimmy Page. I mean,
the phones are lighting up here. I don't know if there's a... No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. That's not correct. Come on, guys.
Get it together.
Yeah, Jimmy Page. I remember, the first thing I heard of Led Zeppelin was Led Zeppelin 2, so a whole lot of love.
That's my favorite, too.
And I was just like,
Yeah.
I remember that record was in stereo. It was like, and I was like, this is crazy. And then I was on a ski trip going up to Whistler or something, and I sat beside my buddy Chad, and he was listening to this dude named Joe Satriani. Right. And we listened to it all the way there and back, and I was just like, and that was it. I went from Jimmy Page to Joe Satriani, and then I found out who Steve Vai was.
Sure.
And then it went into like Eric Johnson, then it was the G3. And
That's so funny. So you could have easily kind of decided to become like that kind of guy, like a guitar, you know, making complete instrumental records of just guitar stuff. Did that ever entertain you, or does the vocal thing kind of tear you away from all that? And he's gone.
Sorry, you cut out there. I'm here.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay, yeah, you were frozen for a second there. Is the so? At what point did the singing come into play?
So that was a little bit later. I didn't sing at all. I was too shy. I did not want to be a front guy. I played guitar in a band. My friend sang, and I just like the guy in the back playing guitar. And then he said, "You know, you should learn how to sing some harmonies, man. Like, you should back me up here." I was like, "All right." So I could not sing and play guitar at the same time.
Really?
It's like, how do you figure this shit out? So once I got a hang of that, I was like, oh, okay. And then he would come over and I'd be like, actually, you know, I wrote a song. And he'd be like, oh, really? And then it kind of became that, where I was like, wait a minute.
I suppose that's when it all changes. Yeah, when you start writing your own songs, that's when you can kind of like, okay, well, he wrote a song, so let him sing it kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we were jamming in my house, so it was kind of like, you know, he would go home and I would just jam and start writing my own stuff. And I think it all sounded like, I think everything sounded like Alice in Chains at that point. I can't remember, but you know, he emulated someone, or Eddie Vedder probably. I think I probably tried to sing like Eddie Vedder or something.
Well, that was the thing at the time. And it probably was a great gateway for, you know, for a guy who didn't necessarily like singing to kind of get into that kind of world. Although Layne Staley, you know, is an underrated vocalist. I mean, he actually does have a lot of range, or did have a lot of range.
I'm sorry.
Eddie has range too, but it's more of like, I can kind of do that, you know, get into that kind of world. But it's not like in the 80s when we were like, holy cow, okay, so we have to sing, you know, really high and scream your head off. That seemed to be what was the thing at the time.
I love that. It was an alto or something, or I listened to Dream Theater as well. I was a huge Dream Theater fan. I can't remember the singer's name is.
I can't either, actually. But, it's Michael.
But you know, he's
Canadian. Yeah. I know that.
Yeah. Oh, is he? That's right. He is Canadian.
Oh, yeah. James LeBrie. Yes.
Yeah, that's it. I know that. LeBrie. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Michael. Yeah. That's it. Michael.
Yeah, Michael James LeBrie. He took the Michael off for his professional career.
And he just sings like,
I think, you know, Corey's been kidnapped.
Three and a half octaves. But Todd, you can do all that stuff. But yeah, I would listen to them, and I'm like, I can't sing this crap. It was just too high. He would sing like almost operatic stuff, a lot of big vibrato.
But that became unnecessary. And I think, you know, it's funny because I have conversations with hardcore friends who are like, you know, well, everything changed. You know, I go, well, music changes. It changed now. It's like different. It's different from what it was 10 years ago. It's what's, you know, so I think that it actually opened a lot of doors for, you know, in that whole period where it became not so much about like writing about, I don't know, strip clubs and, you know, whatever, and just being about like, you know, things of some depth and whatnot. So I imagine at what point does it go from you starting to write songs to that transition? How quickly do you put together like with Dave and Dean and that kind of thing?
So that happened kind of by fluke. So Dave was in another band and they did this little mini tour together. And when they came back, the band broke up because they realized that that's almost like the most perfect thing. You be in a band, it's like, all right, let's go do like a few shows in a van and see what happens. Yeah. And it was just like fist fighting.
It's a sort of make or break. Yeah. It'll make or break you. It
was that broke those guys. after high school, Tyler?
Yeah. Yeah. I think Dave was still, because I met Dave, I think he was in like 11th grade or something. He was still like a kid. And I think I was just out of high school.
Yeah.
And then he called me. He was like, my band is broke up. I want to join your band.
What was your band? Was it called something at the time? Like,
I can't remember. We were I had a thing called 302.
What is that? 302 is that a prefix?
I guess it's 604. 302.
No, it was an engine, Ford engine, 302. Oh,
there you go.
It's like, it's powerful.
And if you don't know what that is, then clearly you're a wanker like me.
And then he's like, I want to be in your band. I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know if there's any room for you. But anyway, he came over and he like laid down the law. I remember Dave was like, I don't want to play any ballads. I'm not playing any pussy shit. He like told laid down the law. And I'm like, all right. So I almost took that I took that almost like as a challenge. So I would go write like heavy riffs. And then we'd have like band practice. Like, all right, Dave, check this out. And so it was almost like as soon as Dave joined the band, it was almost like this, like it was one of those things where we, you know, you start band practice, go over your amp, and he'd be over there. And then by the end of the thing, it's like everyone's so freaking loud. Like, I can't hear. It's like, I can't hear my guitar. And it's like, I think there was a bit of that with me and him where it was like two guitar players like facing each other. We realized like when your cabinet is behind you, all you're listening to is the other dude's speaker in your face.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, all I'm hearing is your speaker, man. It's like, you know, if we actually just swapped our cabinets, we could actually like be able to monitor your own sound. But and I think I kind of took it as a challenge. So he would come over and be like, "Hey, I wrote this riff," and it was shortly after that we were not together very long. I'd say like a few months, and then that was it. We started writing Theory of a Dead Man tracks. They would come over and we would jam like Nothing Could Come Between Us or Invisible Man or something. And I'd be like, "I got this riff," and then we would just start jamming it. Little did we know.
You clearly have that X factor talent of being able to take a riff and turning it into a song, because that's, you know, a lot of guys have riffs. We play with a guy who has riffs. Right. Like, he has a lot of riffs, Slash. But
where,
you know, it's like,
where did he go? Slash, yes.
Yeah. But oh, there he is. Look at that. There's Corey.
I thought you meant Corey.
No, Corey's more of a, he has lots of
stuff. We were trash talking him the whole time.
Yeah, the whole time. Amazing. I'm talking some smack. Just kidding. No, but I'm just saying, like, you know, it's one thing to be able to come up with a cool riff. It's another thing, like yourself, to be able to take that and turn it into. Now, was that something you had kind of like put a bunch of time into, like studying the idea of like first chorus, you know what I'm saying? Like that kind of thing. Or was that just something you kind of stumbled into?
I guess now I can kind of hear it all in my head. So I can kind of like, I already hear a lot of it in my head. So it's almost like a more of a producer thing where I can almost sit back and listen to the song in my head, and I can actually hear what the drums are doing. I can hear where the bridge is going to go. So it makes it a lot easier when you're jamming, because I can already go, okay, stop. Here's what we're going to do. And I can already hear where it's going to go. It's not like just fumbling around until you hit a chord. And be like, sometimes you do. Sometimes you're like,
sure, yeah.
Someone hits a bum note. Someone hits like a you're playing E, and then the bass player is playing a C, and you're like, "Whoa, what was that?" The
bass player like, yeah. "I know, those are good happy accidents."
Yeah, the happy accidents. Totally. Exactly. Yeah.
That's so cool. Do that again.
The bass player acts like he knew what he was doing. And, yeah. Yeah, I was just playing always the minor third there. So
yeah. Well, you know, I thought, you know, it was, yeah, you know,
really create some tension in that part, you know. No, you didn't. That's, you were playing the wrong note, and it just happened to work. Yeah, that's
great. But I miss that, man. I think our next record, I want us to get back in a shitty jam space and just like work from almost scratch. I miss that. We used to do that in all our stuff, and then recently I've been demoing everything up in my studio here, and then kind of sending, like, Joe, our drummer, will send him something with no drums, mm-hmm. and like put drums on it. Then he'll send me drums, and I'll be like, "That's cool. What if, you know?" And then I'll put in my 2 cents if there's something like, I don't, you know, because he's just like, "Well, what do you want?" I'm like, "I don't know, just do whatever you feel. I don't want to tell you what to do." So I like that. But I tell you, the best is when you get four guys or girls, whoever, in a room, and it's just like smells and it's loud, and then you have those happy accidents. Don't totally. You miss that when you're a kid?
Yeah, it's kind of a, I mean, as you're in the same position as most of us, where everything is done remotely now, because the band lives in four different places now, don't they?
Yeah. We're people ask all the time, "How do you guys rehearse?" I'm like, "Well, we fly out to some place and rehearse." And rehearse, it's not hard.
Yeah, exactly. Hard. Basically, like, everybody does that these days. It's actually very rare to have a band that all lives in Los Angeles or all lives in wherever. You know?
True.
Everybody's sort of spread out these days. It's just make sure you have an international airport and you can get to rehearsal or a gig or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you guys should talk about the Brent Fitz era. You know, that.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear some of this, because
how does a guy from Winnipeg and a guy from Vancouver area end up in the same band together?
Well, Fitz, you were already with, Vince at this, like prior to this, were you with Vince?
Yeah, but you know, it's
Vince Neil.
Mutual friends, because I had heard Theory on the radio. I remember seeing you guys on Leno, Tyler.
Yep.
I think you did Make Up Your Mind
Hero, maybe? Not Hero?
Yeah, no,
Hero.
You guys. And of course, I remember you from that Hero song too on the movie soundtrack.
Yeah.
And I saw you there.
That was a big deal.
So I knew about you guys. I just didn't know you because I was in another band and you know, but Yeah, that was a cool tune.
There you go.
I like that because I think it was Josie sang on it with you from Saliva and
Saliva.
Jeremy on drums from Our Lady Peace. That was a big hit.
It was. So that's a cool story because we were recording our first record. Not to cut off, go on a little bit of a tangent before the break.
No, the setup is good because that's the first place I saw you, which was kind of before Theory, right? in a way.
We were in recording our first record, and then Chad, who was co-producing it, he said, "Hey, can we take a day off? I need to track this song." So they tracked the whole freaking Hero, everything, and mixed it in one day. So we were in there just hanging out, and then Josie shows up, and then Matt Cameron played drums. Right. So Matt Cameron,
he played on the recording,
Soundgarden. And Pearl Jam now,
Pearl Jam,
right.
So he came in, and we were like kids. We're like, holy fuck, it's Matt Cameron. We're just watching through a window, like just playing this track. And then he literally after he was done, he literally was like, "Bye." I think his wife was having a baby, or something was happening.
Oh wow!
Because I think they shot the music video like the next day, or so. It was insane how fast it was. But so they're like, "Well, Matt can't be." And then I think his wife was having a baby, so I think they flew in Jeremy from Our Lady Peace.
Oh, okay.
Right. To the drums. And that was a lot of fun.
As they say. Where was that recorded? Kind of at? Is that at the warehouse or something?
Greenhouse. Greenhouse.
Yeah, of course, in Burnaby. I spent a lot of time in that building. Yes, absolutely.
That's a great place. I don't know if it's even there anymore.
I don't think it really functions as a recording studio. I don't know.
Yeah. Where was the first Theory record recorded?
Yeah, there. Greenhouse.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Is that the old Vancouver Studios? Is that Greenhouse? Is that what it turned into?
I think you're right. It was in Burnaby, across Boundary Road there. I was like,
Boundary, exactly. That's it.
I always liked that there was a Boundary Road, and then you're in Burnaby, But we did a lot of stuff there, man.
Yeah.
But so, frozen again.
Before we get too far ahead of ourselves, how did the Chad connection come? Now, were you guys gigging? Were you guys building an audience? Or was it more a case of like he heard music and that was sort of that?
Yeah, that was it. So I had my 302 demo. Yeah. So I recorded that in my house, and a friend of a friend gave that to his girlfriend. And she was a big supporter of Chad, obviously. And I remember going out and seeing Chad them play in Vancouver, but they're playing like small clubs. Like I've never seen them at like a, it was almost like a pub in Vancouver, maybe on Granville, to be honest, or something. This was back in the 90s. This is before I think they might have had like some C-Fox radio play or something.
And yeah, they definitely had some of that like local hang kind of love for a bit there. I wasn't as familiar with them until they kind of became.
And we haven't said it's Nickelback. We haven't said
Chad Kroger. Who was like the king of Vancouver at the time, and then he certainly became the king of Vancouver. And it seemed like his rise, suddenly you appeared out of nowhere. I was like, "Who's this guy?" This guy, and you're in the Hero video on a Spider-Man soundtrack. I'm like, "What the hell is going on? Who are the And then you guys kind of exploded out of there. Yeah,
like it was that fast. Like I remember he called me. One night, he called me like 8 p.m. or something. He's like, "Hey, it's Chad." I'm like, "Chad who?" "Hey, Chad from Nickelback, or Chad Jody's boyfriend, or something like that." I'm like, "Oh, hey, man." "So I'm starting my own label, and I want you guys to be on it." And we're like, "Done. What do we got to do?" We're sending us stuff. I'm like, we didn't care. Exactly. We're like, "Let's do it." But he's like, "You got to come over right now, tonight, drive over to Danny, the drummer from Default's house, drive over to Danny's house. And we're going to record tomorrow morning. We're going to go into Greenhouse and do a 3-song demo." And I was like, "Okay." And then Dean, I called Dean. I'm like, "You got calling sick to work tomorrow, man. You got calling sick." He's like, "I don't know, man." I'm like, "Let's just do it." Dean Back,
bass player.
Yeah. Yep. Dean Back. I'm like, "Let's go." And so I think he picked me up. And Dave was on the island, Vancouver Island, so he couldn't go. And we went over there and we ran through 3 songs, which all 3 were on the first record. And then. Next day, went in the Greenhouse, and that was it. And then it was that fast.
That was Chad. Chad technically producing these songs, the initial.
Yeah. So he produced it, and then they fronted the money, whatever they cost them. They fronted it, and then it was signed to 604. Yeah, it was fast, and it wasn't too much long after that we kind of quit our jobs and said, "Yeah, let's do it," and got signed by Roadrunner and all that jazz.
That's so awesome. Yeah, it's, what a great story, But it says a lot about, your ability to put a song together rather than it just being, how much did they change from what you brought in to the demos that were completed with Chad? Did he...
It depends on the songs. Like, some songs, I remember, there was, no, the chorus was completely changed. Oh, and okay. Some songs there was nothing, like some stuff like, you know, Nothing Could Come Between Us and mm-hmm. like Invisible Man. I think Chad came up with the ideas because I think originally was like the end of the chorus was like, I'm going, gone. Da-na-na-na. And then he said, no, why don't you say like going once, going twice or something? So we're like, all right. So yeah, he would come up with stuff, little things like that. We're like, wait, no, that's not good enough. Let's come up with something better. So, but yeah, I mean, it was really good too, because we literally were clueless, like kids. We'd never been in a real studio, period. We're just like, ugh. Whatever you want us to do, we'll do it.
Yeah, but really good mentoring, just because Chad is a very, I mean, he all he cares about is songs, right? Good songs and hit songs. So clearly he saw something potentially with you guys, and good songs was the most important thing to put a record out with, you know, catchy stuff. And clearly you guys had, you know, I mean, it wasn't too hard to say that probably Make Up Your Mind and Nothing Can Come Between Us were going to be, you know, radio palpable, cool songs that obviously now have been proven hits.
Yeah. He was big into hits. Everything, every song had to be a hit. There was no room for album tracks. There was no room for like jam 5-minute songs. Like I had a song that was like to turn into Point to Prove. And I think on the 302 demo, it was like 7 minutes long. I had like a 2-minute guitar show with like shredding. And he's like, this is ridiculous. We got to cut this down to 3 minutes. That was the biggest battle, was cutting. And we're like, no, man. You know, this is, you know, the integrity of the artist is so stupid. So he was big into like, you know, we got to get to the chorus by 1 minute. We got to have three hooks. It's got to be 3 minutes long, you know. And so we were like, sure, we would cut out guitar solos. We were cutting stuff in half. And, you know, by the end of the day, a lot of it got kind of butchered down. I'm sure we were pissed. But now I look back and I'm like, yeah, but what a great learning experience, you know.
It's the first lesson to learn as a young band, because you just kind of do your thing and then you become sort of married to what, well, this is just the way the song goes. And then someone goes like, well, it doesn't have to be. So once they start cutting off pieces of the song, it can be quite traumatic, really, what it feels like.
Yeah. Like I don't remember the last time someone faded out a song. I think the new John Mayer song fades out. And I was
I was just thinking that the other day. I'm like, we should make the next song fade out.
Yeah.
Do it.
It's always because fun, no one does it anymore. And
no.
And why do you think that is, Tyler? Because I have my own theory about why that happens.
It's radio. They want to get right into the next song on radio.
Yeah.
They want to end and then go right into the next thing rather than having 15 seconds of like dying down. I don't know. It's
remember on like
a lot more songs on radio.
On the Diary of a Madman record, there's like a ton of songs fade out, and they fade real low because Randy Rhoads is just like unleashed at the end, and he's just doing all this, you know, total shredding. So they just kind of like, well, do we fade it out now? We better keep this part. You can tell they're like physically fading it out really slow to let more and more of that play. But yeah, you're right. It is kind of a lost art, unfortunately. But it feels, when you do have a song, and I remember back in the day having a song that we faded out, and you look at each other like, wow, it feels like, you know, an AM radio song, or like you feel like you've actually recorded something cool. Yeah. What were you gonna say, Corey? What's your?
I was gonna say, I think it's because so many bands play to tracks these days that a fade out just messes them up. Like, now we don't have an ending for the song, so we have to make an ending, because otherwise the tracks are gone.
They just keep standing back from the mic.
Well, you remember? Well, that's what they would do on those talk shows when they had to fake it back in the 70s and 80s, right?
True. Yeah.
Think about it. People would just have to like solid gold. They'd have to add an audience like a cheer track at the end or something.
Oh, that's right.
Solid gold. Solid gold was like that every time. They'd be playing and they'd be like kind of fading, and then the audience would kind of, you know, as soon as it was starting to fade, the crowd would applaud. But the band's still trying to pretend like this is totally normal. I actually saw a band once fade out live. I think I want to say it was Orphan. But it was somebody like that, and they actually faded out live. Like they kind of did a really good job of turning themselves down and playing quieter till it just kind of fell apart. It was really, really clever. Yeah.
So let's get to the Fitz era.
Yeah, that's right.
Please tell me all about that.
Yeah, well, let me call it up.
Fitzpedia.
You know, I do remember being in the States and getting a call from Fab, Fabrizio Del Monte, our dear friend, sound guy, tour manager with you guys.
Yeah.
And it's, again, it's relationships and friendships. And do you know that, maybe you don't know Tyler, but back when I first moved to LA, Fab was working for Econoline Crush.
Okay.
So 96, they were opening on the Kiss tour, on the Kiss reunion tour. And just at that time, and Econoline was basically a Winnipeg band, you know, Trevor Hurst, and he was just from outside of Winnipeg. And I had just moved to LA, and at that time they were looking for a drummer. And I remember the management, and I somehow got a call, and it was Bruce Allen's management at that time. And so Fab was involved with that band, and somehow he was in LA, and he actually, I think, met me at the Rainbow or something, and he was asking me about joining Econoline Crush. So technically, that whole startup relationship with Fab was a couple years prior, and that's how we stayed friends. And fast forward to years later, when he was working and touring with you guys, he was the one that actually probably, I mean, I don't know all the, I mean, we never even talked about it, the backstory on when you guys were looking for a different drummer after your first tour, and it was Fab that called me. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I guess so, because I don't remember. So it must have been. I think we did rehearsal. Did we do rehearsals in Vancouver?
So this is what, I do remember.
I think so.
Fab had contacted me. I probably spoke to you guys, maybe some management or something. And then I was just winding up a Vince Neil tour because it was the end of 2004. And Vince was actually going to go back and do a Motley Crue reunion around that time. So it was kind of like a perfect timing because Vince was going to go do those tours and right at the end of the year. And then you guys called me, check this out. The day I jammed with you guys, Dimebag Darrell was shot and killed. That really? Was the day. That was the day.
Dark one.
Yep. Where it was that night. So you and I, the whole band.
When did he get, was that December? When was that?
Yeah. Yeah. It was December 2004. And I remember jamming with you guys. And, you know, I met Al Ponovic. Todd and I are really close with Al, actor, musician friend of ours from Winnipeg.
You can see him on Snowpiercer on HBO X or no, or HBO Max. What is that on? I think it's on HBO Max. Anyway, he's an actor. He's a big TV giant.
Show. Yeah. So I met him after jamming with you guys with Scully. Remember Scully, Todd?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Rest in peace. Yeah. My two Winnipeg friends. And they were like, oh, cool, man. You're in town. And I go, yeah, I'm jamming with, a band, Theory. They, of course, knew you guys. And basically, I just was like, I kind of came in to Vancouver and jammed with you guys. And I don't even know if we had a plan other than I remember that you guys were just about to release Gasoline. And there was a whole setup plan, tour with Shinedown, and a lot of it just moved really quick. I remember next thing I knew, my gear was coming up, road cases and everything. And I remember Hoogie was around too.
Yeah.
Maybe Hoogie was with you guys, like guitar teching and whatnot.
It was Hoogie just like, and Lightning.
And was he there too?
Lightning. And then who was the who was Hoogie's buddy that did merch?
Yeah.
Remember you filmed that whole? It was you that filmed that whole fighting scene in the front of the bus. Remember I've you seen filmed that. It, and he's like, they're fighting. They roll down into where the bus driver is, our old bus driver, and he had to pull over. And he's like, just stop. Because Hoogie and Gary, it was Gary Gagne or Gary.
Oh, Gary.
You knew?
Yeah.
What was his name? Yeah. Thanks, they Gary, for helping me.
They were shirtless. Our crew always had their shirts off. They always had, there was alcohol involved.
Drunk, fighting at 4 a.m. We're all in bed except for you. And you're just filming them, like, wrestling, but now it's getting serious.
right, as it always does.
And then I'm pretty sure I was just sitting in the front lounge. it just went bad. Like, guys just on the bus.
Trying to drive. People.
Oh, Jamie. Jamie was freaking out. Our bus driver stopped the bus and made those. He's like, stop it. Just stop. Yeah, because.
Where's that footage? You have that footage somewhere. You got to find it. You sent it to me years ago.
Should have had
it
ready for that. Should have had this ready for that.
But I do remember you doing, I remember you came in because we rehearsed or we tried out quite a few different drummers, and every drummer that came in was like this. So every drummer came in, sat down. They all brought their own snares, and then every drummer came in and did this. Okay, and we're like, and then you came in, and we're like, I'm like, oh, can you do harmonies? And you were like, yeah, I know them all. And we're like, holy fuck. So that was the thing, that you were so good on drums, but you also nailed all the harmonies. We're just like, this is the guy. That was it. Yeah.
I got to tell you, is it true that the previous drummer died in a bizarre gardening accident? Please confirm that. Or
deny. Is that a rumor?
<That's totally laughs> I don't know. Well, no, your old drummer, Carl. Tim, was a good friend of your guys. I think you all grew up in the same neighborhood. So I was a bit of an anomaly because I was a Winnipegger and I was living in the States in Vegas. And
that's right.
Yeah, you guys were all still in Vancouver. That's before, of course, you moved down south.
Were you married at that time or your girlfriend?
Well, I mean, Christy and I have been together a couple years before that. Yeah.
He was married to the sea, like a sailor, like a pirate.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a good story. Here's some inside interesting. I just realized and remembered when I had to get ready to jam your songs before I got to you, I didn't have a place in Vegas to set up my drums because I had been on tour with Vince and I was living in Vegas, but I hadn't bought my house yet. And I had an apartment, so I had to find a place to jam. And believe it or not, I rehearsed the entire Theory set before, like for, you know, a week or whatever it was, at the top of Caesar's Palace, true story, because my friends in Celine Dion, I played hockey with them. It was Eve Frula, the keyboard player for Celine, and we were good friends. And he said, hey, Brent, we have this rehearsal place at the top of Caesars where we get together and it's like up this staircase and around and it's above the stage in the corner. He goes, you can come and bring your drums down. And I was like, is that allowed? Am I allowed to bring my gear over to Caesars? He goes, oh, yeah, no problem. I went, parked in this, you know, like a loading dock at Caesars Palace, and I loaded all my drums up and I would go there every day and jam the Theory set before I jammed with you guys up at the top of Caesars. And I had could walk out the door to the roof and look out onto the strip. So it's crazy.
That's amazing.
That's dedication. That's dedication.
That is. It paid off. That's crazy.
But hey,
thanks, Eves. Apparently, we should be thanking Eve for that.
Well, and
so how long did you go with those guys then, Brent?
Well, so we did an entire cycle on the Gasoline tour, which was a couple years.
2 years, yeah. Yeah,
I mean, once we hit the ground running on a tour, I know we jumped in with Shinedown, who were a brand new band as well that time. They only had their first record out. And we did a lot of co-touring with Breaking Benjamin, who were only an album or so in. And but there was like an early a Leno performance that we did.
That's right. We did actually. Did we do the big three? Was that with the 3 Days Grace?
That was the end of the tour. We did sort of a co-headline with 3 Days.
Co-headline tour with Russ Giroux. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like arenas and big theaters. That was good.
Yeah.
I want to bring up one of my great memories, and it's a good story, is I'm not going into any dirt, but it was a great day when at the Leno gig, remember when we got there, the stage manager or a production manager took you aside and said, okay, so we just want to talk to you about some lyrics. Do you remember this?
Gotta love that.
What was the song? No Surprise. Yeah.
Well, the reason they were asking you to change lyrics. Why? Because what lyrics did you have in the song?
Bitch. Right? Wasn't it? The bitch is leaving me or something?
Yeah, but you know, remember there was that controversy of was the line gone and fucked.
Gone and fucked.
Yeah.
We got that song on rock radio with a lie.
Yeah.
So it was Gone and Fucked with all the other guys that you gone and fucked, and we told people it was Gunning For, and we had the F word on radio.
Amazing.
So what did we do at? Yeah, and we got away with it. Every time I heard that song,
so you're talking
I said Gone and Fucked.
Wow.
Just to clarify for the listeners at home, you're saying on Jay Leno, the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, filmed in Burbank, California, at the time, you had to go on there, they pulled the full Doors thing, like where it's like, you know, where they you can't say Get Higher, you know, but they said to you, you can't say
Higher. Yeah.
Well, there was shit, right. Witch, or bitch. Was shit yeah, on there,
the
bitch,
same,
and
all
fuck.
The same song. Oh, was,
Tyler yeah, covered all the, yeah.
You're like Eminem and, or something.
And then they started to offer you, like, options. So maybe we'd like you to say which, and you were just like, I remember you going, oh, this is unbelievable. They're telling me what lyrics I should, like, they had suggestions right. ready to go.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, they're not wrong,
witch.
But.
The witch is leaving me. I remember I had to say which, and I was, yeah. You can't, I mean, we're on television. I remember, yeah, I, that's right. I remember I had to change some lyrics, but I did it. I didn't care. I was like, yeah, all right. But who was the guy? Was that the one with Matt LeBlanc?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty hilarious. Awesome.
With Joe. I do remember kind of chirping in your ear, and I was like, Tyler, you got to let the F-bomb go. It'll be the I was like, being your devil's advocate, I'm like, Tyler, you got to fucking do it. Oh, my God.
Do it. You'll be a rock star. I could see you doing that. Brent was a bit of an instigator.
The controversy. You know,
he may not say he is, but he's a bit of a guy who, like, kind of.
No, but I think sometimes I'm arm's length. Like even on the bus when the crew guys are naked and doing, you know, wrestling. I'm usually filming. But I remember because Vince Neil had been on New Year's just prior to that. I remember he and I had played with him and been around the planet, and every week there was a new controversy. But he had gone happy fucking New Year, Tommy Lee, on Jay Leno, and the next day it was all over the news.
I'm not sure what Vince is doing right now, but it's probably something that's, you know, causing some kind of controversy, even at the Cheesecake Factory or wherever he happens to be at the moment. You know,
he's in Nashville. He's in Nashville,
so he's no longer in Vegas.
No, he's in Nashville now. Yeah. He got chased out. He wasn't allowed. See, he said bitch on TV or something and got chased to Nashville. So it's a good thing he didn't say that.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, little we know, that was the last time we were on Leno, probably because Brent made me say, fuck.
Hey, check this out. So after that experience, Todd and I had a similar episode. And it's so funny because when Todd and I experienced it, I went, I've already been through this with Theory of a Dead Man, where they're, you know, they're real
the
sensitive.
Pen? Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Let's hear it. I wonder what happened.
Todd was Slash. We played on there with Slash. That was 2010, March of 2010, maybe April. I can't remember. A long time ago now, but he.
It was our first gig.
It was our first thing with him, and he's like, and I remember at the time because there was a whole controversy about Conan O'Brien had taken over the Tonight Show briefly and then was taken out and Jay Leno was put back in, and there was all kinds of controversy. And I remember a friend of mine saying, dude, you totally got to wear a Conan O'Brien t-shirt on that show, and that'd be so funny, so punk rock. And we're kind of like giggling to ourselves, but I'm like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not, this is like, I don't, this isn't, yeah, I'm just like playing in this guy's band. And we get there, and I don't. He never said anything to any of us. Nothing was really said about it. He just, like, we went on to play, and he just attached a because Conan was rehearsing next door when he was doing that tour. Conan had his full band go on the road with him, and I guess that's where Slash acquired this Team Coco pin was the thing. So he just attached it to his guitar strap, played the show, and it was just chaos because they were like, you could tell in the middle of the filming, kind of like, is that a. Is that a Conan O'Brien pin on his? So that they filmed a lot of it from far back, so you could see. It worked out well for us because Fitz and I are kind of in the whole song. It's kind of like, so they just kind of used the far back cameras, and they were very. You could see all the, like, the floor cameras. You could see everybody on the floor and everything. And then some of the close up stuff, they tried to kind of like keep it, you know, below where the pin was, but it kind of popped in and out. So, and we were basically like, I remember going back to the dressing room like, hey, good, high five, and it was kind of like our tour manager came back like, okay, let's go, we gotta go right now.
Yeah,
we basically got escorted out.
Really? Yeah. I know Jay did not have a sense of humor about that whole Conan thing at that time, so I think that was kind of what it was. But I don't know if we were like lifetime banned or just banned from Jay's version of the Tonight Show.
We haven't been back since, Tyler.
We did Jimmy's 12:30 show back on when he was on the Late Show or whatever, late night. But yeah, that was so. Apparently, you guys can you could have pulled some moves on Jay.
What you're saying is that we did it first. That's what you're saying.
I think so.
Sounds like we did it first. Sounds like Fitz. Sounds like Brent is the behind both of these.
I think that might be it. He probably told you to say fuck, and he probably gave Slash the Conan pin.
Oh my yep. God! I swear
it all,
to God,
all comes together. Now, which of the theory videos is Brent in? Brent's in Santa Monica, right?
Yeah. Are you in Santa Monica? Since you've been gone. Yeah.
So I want to make sure everybody reading or watching this right now goes and YouTubes all these, because.
So no surprise, we shot in LA.
Yeah.
You know what's cool? I have to comment. You know what happened on the Santa Monica video? Okay, filmed in Vancouver. Right before that, we played Winnipeg, and I had a whole tub of old concert t-shirts that I brought from home. And you remember how, Tyler, every time we'd go to do a music video, there'd be discussions about, okay, guys, so...
Right. Yeah.
Here's what we're suggesting wearing. You guys wear. They always would come to the band and say, "Well, here's
they
some
have like a they had like a wardrobe person or a stylist or whatever.
Just someone in management had an opinion.
Yeah, and they always like try to put like Dave in. Would be wearing like a beret and some scarf, and he's like, "I don't."
Oh, please,
like, please Dave wouldn't even wear makeup. Dave won't even wear pancake. He's like, "Oh, wear the thing away from me." He was just like, "Yeah."
Yeah, but because just because of that, I know that, you know, it used to piss us all off, and I believe Dave in the video is wearing my Iron Maiden Power Slave actual tour t-shirt, because Dave could fit it, so I had it since I was a kid. But if you watch the Santa Monica video, and you know, it's little clips, but you watch Dave, he's wearing the white 1984 Iron Maiden Power Slave t-shirt, which is fucking cool.
Was it a three-quarter? Was it like Raglan? Was it like a three-quarter?
Yeah. Total three-quarter, The baseball style, I think they called those or whatever,
Baseball tee? Yeah. So now that shirt's worth nothing now. You ruined it.
Yeah, it's been... Yeah. No, I...
Hit stains on it. You're like, damn! Damn it. Yeah, Santa Monica was filmed in Vancouver. Then we did Better Off. Remember Better Off was filmed on the road? Like South Carolina. Remember I think Dan Davidson or who directed that? Remember they came out and
Dan.
Remember we just filmed at shows.
Yeah, speaking of videos, like us guys in theory, we get pretty creative with our videos and we definitely have fun doing them. And I mean, my first video experiences were with you, Tyler. I hadn't been in a band before that was doing videos. I mean, we did a lot. I think we did about 5 videos in the course of whatever, a year and a half.
Yeah.
But I remember they brought a crew out on tour with us. They had those brand new red cameras, which was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And they were just like, okay, so we're going to just film you guys doing your thing. And they would be like looking for exciting, you know, oh, this will be great for the video. But unfortunately, I don't know, you know, it's 9 times out of 10 people think, well, what are you doing on your day off? They were like, let's go. Remember, they took us to like a fucking baseball diamond or something. I don't know. It was the stupidest shit.
Yeah, it was. Because we were here, guys. Boring. We didn't. There was no partying happening. We were boring. It's like, what are you guys doing your day off? Like, oh, play video games.
Play so instead,
and where we were back then,
we would go through my phone, and I would look at, well, what stupid stuff happened with Hoogie and our crew guys on days off.
Yeah, those guys. Oh wait, those guys are
is that Hoogie
stars.
With his shirt off? Is that Hoogie with a Darth Vader mask in the bus being, you know, ridiculous?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess that's going to have to be in the video. And I think if you watch Better Off, if you can Google that, there are some clips of Hoogie that kind of like apparently made the video ridiculous.
Those are always the best videos, though, when they come and film you being yourselves as opposed to you know the lip syncing kind of thing can be a little bit challenging, but
you're not in a dark warehouse with chains drip with water dripping off of them. And we're going to go to Todd, who's playing ferociously on the bass.
Yeah.
And Brent is slamming on the drum, on the tom. So I love all the treatments.
Yeah, I know those.
Treatments for music videos, and every single one's the same. It's like, we're in a warehouse. The band is playing, and there's old equipment and a light. And we're like, this is cool.
Well, Tyler, how many other than the band doing their thing in a warehouse, how many videos have you had to shoot where you were starring in the storyline? Right?
A lot.
That's always kooky,
a lot. Yeah. I've shot videos where I'm the only one in it. The band's not even in it.
That's yeah. So
I would be all cranky. I'm like, this sucks. It's like two-day shoot, Tyler.
It's funny that you brought that up about the treatment stuff, because I remember reading Treatments and saying no thank you, and then seeing a video on Much Music like a month later and going, yeah, that's totally the treatment that we read that day of some other band, you know, Wide Mouth Mason or whoever. You
it's kind of like this, it's the songwriting thing, like, not to diss songwriters, but like songwriters will have a bunch of songs and they'll pitch them to bands over and over. And I remember I don't want to say who it was, but I remember I was in Nashville and this guy pitched me this song and I was like, no, actually, ironically, we have a song kind of just like this, but thanks. And then about 6 months later, a band that we knew released a song and it was that song. I'm like, that's the song. So he just keeps pitching it. It's of just course, like Treatments, yeah, right?
That's what you do. If you direct videos or you write songs, you're going to try and get them placed. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
What about when, you know, labels, they're, you know, obviously they're supporting, but they're also still wanting, like, to make sure there's hits. And I think just before I joined, you had done a writing session with Randy Bachman, right?
Yes.
And maybe Zach Wilde as well?
And Zach Wilde. The Zach Wilde one was crazy. Randy Bachman was, what a great guy. Like, he had the biggest Gretsch collection in the world.
Yeah, he
did. And if I wish I got a couple of Gretsches now that are a couple of 67 or 68 Gretsches, and they are damn, my favorite guitars. Man, I wish back then I would have bought something from him, because I heard he sold the whole collection or something for millions of dollars.
I think so.
But yeah, we went over to his house, and I mean, I can't say anything bad about Randy Bachman, but we had an interesting time over there, me and Dave. But the Zach Wilde one was crazy. Like, we went to the studio with Zach. We jammed for like an hour, and he's like, "Let's hit the studio." And we went to, what was the studio in L.A.? It was where Led Zeppelin did some stuff. I think it was it's on the tip of my tongue, but it doesn't matter. But we went in there and we tracked, and it was all on tapes. Like, let's do it on 2-inch tape. And then what's his face from a White Zombie came in and did the drums. What a great guy.
John Tempesta?
Yeah, John Tempesta came in and did the drums.
Oh, cool.
It was a great time. But I remember getting a call and they said, whatever you do, don't let Zach drink Jack Daniels. They're like, do not let him drink Jack. And they were telling us this. So yeah, we're like, let's go bowling. So we went bowling, and then we're bowling with Zach Wilde. And you know what's the crazy thing is, he drove this pickup truck, and it was just him and his tour manager. And he would have, like, his guitars, like his famous guitar, you know, the Bullseye Les Paul?
Yeah.
He would have those, and those would just be in the back of his truck. No, nothing. Just, like, sitting there. Just
like, in no the case? Oh, in the case?
No, in the cases. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But, like, just, and he would just leave them in there while we went and bowled. Like, no, some can come by and be like, hey. And me and Dave were like, are you serious? You can leave them there? I was like, yeah, they're fine. And then we went in and we don't let them drink Jack Daniels. And we, like, literally sat down at the bowling alley. It's, you know where it is. It's the one that's got the deli in the front on Ventura Boulevard.
Yeah.
It's right by that where we went and got sushi.
What is that deli called? Isn't it Jerry's? Jerry's Deli, isn't it?
Jerry's Deli. Yeah. It's right by the whatchamacallit Lodge.
Sportsman's
Lodge. Yeah. Yeah. So we went in there and we sat down and he went, four Jacks and Coke. And we're like,
uh-oh.
And we all just got hammered. And he was so hammered. And then we went to the studio and he was so drunk. And he's like, we're sleeping here tonight. And me and Dave were like, no.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, we're going to work all night. We're going to sleep here tonight. And the poor guy, like the engineer who just worked at the studio, like, I thought he was a couple times he was going to start crying because he was like, for 16 hours in, you know. And the poor guy, and then he freaked out and started yelling at us. He was like,
Really?
Give me a shot. Yeah, because he was just had enough. He started yelling at us and stuff. And Dave's like, hey, calm down, bro. What's your problem? As if he hasn't been dealing with a bunch of drunken buffoons for 16 hours. So anyways, like, it was like 2 a.m. and me and Dave, like, we're like, okay, we're in. And we just left. We're like, this guy will not allow us to leave. So me and Dave just left. And then we found out the next morning, Mandy Moore had a photo shoot in that studio, and they went in there, and there was Zakk Wylde and his tour manager asleep on the floor. The engineer was probably there. I was like, who the hell are these guys? It's like a couple of dudes where it looked like biker looking dudes. Mandy Moore like setting up for a photo shoot.
Oh, that's good. That's
but that song never saw the light of day.
I'm not surprised. Oh, wow. Was it productive at all? Like, did it turn into a song even?
It turned into a song. Song, but it was like, you know, nothing that we would have put on a record. It was just it was a great experience. Zakk was you know, he got everything under control, I think, a few years later. I think he's sober now, but
he's been sober for quite a while. He's very much the same guy.
He's a great guy though. I mean, it was just a great experience.
Was the Randy Bachman song end up on
No, I mean, Randy Bachman, like the songs we were writing with him were like Beatles tracks. Like, they were just very something that would be on a Guess Who album or something. So they just weren't really, I mean, me and Dave just kind of went along with it.
Sure.
Just enjoyed ourselves.
Is that part of that? Is that part of the kind of like record company hamster wheel? Like, go right with this guy.
Yeah,
right
I think so.
We've all had.
Yeah, they were literally like at that point, it was just. They were just like, what about Randy Bachman? What about, Zakk Wylde or Randy Bachman? But, ironically, that record had zero co-writes. Like, we didn't end up writing with anybody. I think the A&R at our label was like, okay, this is not, getting to write with people is a bad idea.
Right.
You know, which we were happy we were able to put, the band was actually write a band record and not have songwriters. So that's good.
Yeah, but that is part of the process is that thing where they, you know, this guy writes songs and this guy, you know, next thing you know, you're doing that thing. Go ahead, Brent.
Yeah.
I did like, you guys did that cover from the Alice in Chains Sap, and you did Midnight Rider. What were those couple little covers in between that too?
Yeah.
The Alice in Chains track was really great.
Yeah, I think it was Got Me Wrong.
Yeah, Got Me Wrong.
Great song.
I don't know if you can hear that.
That was a great EP.
We always only get three chords and then you put it back down.
He just gives it.
Everybody wants to hear you sing, man.
That's it.
Sap was like
a Coldplay on the piano, Tyler. I taught you Coldplay back in the day. I'm sure you've learned all the songs now. What was that other song we used to like in E? What was it?
Well, was it Spiders?
Maybe. It was on Parachutes.
It was all, and it goes into Pro Tools. Yeah, it was. I think it was the Spiders one.
Yeah,
I can play that. I have a real piano over there, but it's out of tune. The tuner only comes by on Mondays. So.
There you go.
Oh, you have a real piano. Great.
Understood.
Yeah.
How long have you been in your Burbank house now?
I've been here about 11 years.
And what is your address? Just kidding.
My social security number is. A lot of stuff that we like on our last record, a lot of stuff that I didn't hear was kept. Like, we had a song called "History of Violence," which was our first single on the last record, and that was the piano was on a record right over there.
Oh wow!
Cool. Sounded awesome. It was just I bought that piano for $350.
Amazing.
And it's a piece of crap. Bucks.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a piece of crap, and I just took the lid off and. Where is it?
And Tyler, your studio back there, when you bought the house, it wasn't a studio and you made it? It was a garage, or what was it?
Yeah, it was like a yoga studio. It was Patton Oswalt, you know, the comedian. It's his old house.
Yeah.
It was his wife's yoga studio. So, yeah, this used to be kind of the live room. It's pretty big. I think it's about 20 by 20. And then, the other room was smaller. And it was so loud in there, like it was so loud. And then I switched it because Joe had his drums here and they called me up and said, can you ship my drums to me? And that was the end of it. I'm not going to buy a drum kit. I'm like, forget drums.
Well, you've got enough to work with within your Pro Tools world or whatever. Yeah. Now, speaking of Joe, Joe is a guy I see on a regular basis here in Vegas. Now he's part of we hang out and the wives get along and stuff like that. So, it's funny because Joe's
been considered in the band. Is he considered an associate? An associate of the Flatlands Mafia?
Oh, of course he is. He's from Winnipeg. Yeah, he's
from Stonewall. So we have to bag on him. He's not quite from Winnipeg, but
that's even more hardcore. Yeah.
Is Joe the one that replaced you, Brent?
Yeah.
Joe came in on our third record.
Replace yourself with a younger and better.
Or did you?
Yeah, actually.
Brent found him.
I don't know if you know, Tyler, that when I had seen Joe in Winnipeg, of course, I've known Joe forever. I literally, when Joe was in Winnipeg, he was, you know, gigging all around town. He was the busiest guy in town, but he was working at probably Mother's Music at the time. And in some weird way, when I was in Winnipeg, I kind of felt like when Joe was telling me about how his job was just not, you know, just wasn't, you know, he was like the big guy in Winnipeg, but he was, I could, you know, and he was always like, I knew he kind of looked up to, you know, some of the things I had done. And I literally looked at Joe that day, we were hanging at the music store, and I felt in my heart, I was like, you know, he is going to be a better, he's going to be the best guy in Theory of a Dead Man, better than me. And I honestly, sometimes, and you guys all know, you know, Corey and Todd, you've known me for years. I always like to be good with personalities and putting bands together, and I'm real sensitive to that. And I've been doing it since I was a kid. But I literally said, Joe, you are going to be a better drummer than me in Theory of a Dead Man. I don't know if you knew that, Tyler, but I literally said, I told Joe, I think this is your shot. I think I need to pass the torch to you. And, you know, because he played a lot like me in some ways, and we came from the same city. We had a lot of the same skills, but just, I don't know. I mean, he must be the right drummer. He's been in the band, a long time.
I think it was the perfect 13 years.
Wow. And sometimes to know when you're, I think Joe was actually a better drummer than me for, you know, hey, in Took, I replaced myself with a much better drummer in Shane Gallus. So apparently I'm doing this all the time.
What happened to Shane? He didn't need to be on this. He was like, oh, who?
He's always on a beach somewhere with a beautiful woman. We never really know what he's up to.
I should probably find out what her phone number is.
You probably find it on the future restraining order from
That's KML. Right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's actually interesting. I had a friend of mine, the poor guy, a friend of mine hit me up and he said, hey, I think I got the perfect girl for you.
Uh-oh.
Famous last words. So he hooked me up with this girl and I was on tour, so we never actually met. She lived in France and she lived in Paris and she worked at perfume company. I can't, one of those big massive fashion things. I don't know.
Yeah. There's a bunch of those. Yeah.
And so we talked and right away something was off. I was like, this isn't. So we talked for like, while I was on the whole tour, it was probably about a month or something, and we never even met, and they got to the point where it was just so ridiculously creepy that I had to get a cease and desist. My lawyer to send
oh,
her
no.
a cease and desist.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
really?
Wow.
And I told her to stop calling me, and she did not like that one. And
oh,
she didn't.
No.
Yeah. Ah, that sucks to be that.
That's
tragic.
Always
like,
fun.
I'm sorry, man. Oh no. The old restraining order.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for the hookup. Thanks for the hookup, brother.
Yeah exactly. Yeah. Oh man.
Boy.
Wow. So when you left Brent, was it because you got an opportunity to play in some other thing, or what happened? Or did you just get fired?
No, I mean, it was
let's call it out. He got fired, didn't he? He totally got fired.
No, Brent.
I'm just kidding.
But no, I mean, I think it was just at the time when we toured together, I just I mean, honestly, because I know personalities, and you know, maybe, you know, here we are years later and we've not played together in a long time, but I think I knew that my experiences and Tyler's and those guys, you know, I had a little bit of a, maybe I was a little out of place sometimes. And I just felt like Joe would have been just perfect in, you know, replacing me. And I just kind of made an executive decision. I thought, I think Joe's a better drummer in the band. And maybe Tyler was mad at me at the time.
No,
honestly.
No, I remember having a phone call and you said you had an opportunity because I think I was writing new material. And so there's a lot of time off. So there's time off and there's no money being made. And you're probably, I remember just sitting at home while I think I was in Vancouver at the time, staying in some rental place, writing songs. And you called me and said, hey, I just got an opportunity to play with Alice Cooper and I'm going to take it.
That was
a conversation, but you know, that stuff, I mean, we definitely never fought. There was never any.
No.
No.
It's so Canadian. Why are you smiling? Yeah.
Why are you smiling?
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm seriously, I think one of the great things a lot of the stuff I experienced, you know, touring with you guys was a lot of firsts for me. And it was really actually very eye opening because like I said before, when we were doing all those, you know, it was, the early morning stuff with a very good management team. You've always had excellent management behind the band. And there was just a lot of moving parts all the time. And it was it was important to learn, you know, a lot of the bands I had been in were more touring things where I was like, I'm playing with Vince Neil. Okay. He's from Motley Crue, but I'm not in Motley Crue. You're more like the hired guy and you're touring, backing, playing somebody else's songs. And when I joined with you guys, it was like a very current, relevant thing. It was moving fast. So a lot of that for me was like
grind.
It was a lot of new cool stuff. But in some ways, I also knew that I was always wanting to play. Oh, I'd love to play with Alice Cooper. And I know I have a lot of relationships in the business and there's always gigs coming left and right. And I mean, if you think about it, since I've played with you guys, I've been in 10 bands playing with all different people and experiences. And I still love doing that. I really like playing with a lot of different people. So, But I really think, you know, we don't have Joe to defend himself here, but he's a pretty damn good guy in the band, I think. I think he's done a great job. Yeah. And he's played on the records and you know, really, I just had coffee with him the other day. So I enjoy hanging out with Joe, knowing that he's really done a good job of, you know, kind of like stepping in. And because he came from the small town. He came from small town.
Yeah. Joe almost filled in for Took one night. Remember that?
Yeah, I was going to say, he's almost a Took alumni. Filled in for Shane on something. And then what happened? It got canceled or something, so we never did.
Well, you guys had a video or some stuff to do. So actually, you know, Joe was too busy to come play with us.
That's
what it was. Yeah, I think some theory stuff came up.
We were doing Motley Crue, and Tommy Lee burnt his hand on some fireworks. We were all there watching.
Jeez Louise.
And because he was just nuts. And then, so the next morning I woke up and Joe was already up and he was like listening to stuff. I'm like, what's going on? And they're like, I woke up this morning and they came, I don't know if they knocked on the bus and like, yeah, you got to learn all the Motley Crue set tonight. Cause you're playing, you're playing a Motley Crue tonight. And Joe's just like,
wow.
And so he's freaking out and he's like, and I'm like, oh my God, how the fuck? But then,
wow.
But then they got what's this from Seven Dust flew in or
Morgan
flew in or it was we were in his town or something and I think he knew the songs already or something but they had him come in for one night and like he did well but like the guy didn't know the set like there's no way to know it so I remember him like because I think there was a bunch of click going on and so the poor guy had to like literally just he knew the songs but he didn't know like. The transitions between songs, you know, shit goes dark, something starts, and he's just like, when do I, and, you know, and the drum tech's going, play. The poor guy.
Jeez.
No time, right? You had like 4 hours to learn it.
Story of our lives. I mean, we threw Corey in to learn the Slash set. We've all had to been thrown into something where we weren't like, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, here we go. Throw and go.
Shane was thrown into Vince's chair.
There's a bunch of Canadians. I mean, Brent, you hooked up Ashkig.
Yeah, there's a lot of
Canadians. The, yeah, other than the old Frank, old man Frank.
Yeah.
Right?
The Vegas well, born and raised.
That's right.
I mean, I just remember being a kid in Winnipeg, and if you didn't know people, you didn't get out of, you know, the little small circles and that. So, you know, and the day I moved to LA and connected dots, I didn't know anybody. I had to start from you know, ground zero. So everything's always about people and relationships. So all the bands and the people that I connect, I always, you know, hey, that guy's a great player and that guy's a friend of mine and, you know, he's a good hang. And I mean, literally, that's what Took is. We're all friends. I mean, you know,
yeah.
You're basically Took as well, Tyler. You're like, you know, friend alumni. We go, hey, Tyler, you want to come and sing on something? It's just, that's how it is. You know, it's just, yeah. It's always who you know. It's never like, it's nothing more than that. It's always recommendations, and you got to pick guys you like.
What would the American version of Took, would it be Beanie? Yeah.
Yes, pretty much.
Would it be Beanie? Would it be ski cap? Or I've heard toboggan.
Should we franchise it into an American version? Hey, Beanie's playing down at the Roxy tonight. Go down.
Yeah, Took. Totally. I love it.
He isn't helping us now, because, you know, we found out in, you know, Portuguese and whatnot, Took means touch or talk. Touch.
Yeah.
So something like that, having lots of fans around the world, they're like, oh, you named your band Touch. Okay. And it's like, well, you know, that word in that language, at least it's not an offensive word.
It's a chef's hat in France, though, so it's not nearly as cool.
Yeah.
But with the
your logo is like, it's a chef. The chef with a guitar. Took. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's not nearly as cool, yeah.
He's playing some sort of like bird, some chicken or something. It's, I don't know. Oh, he's got like a turkey baster, and it's got like three or six things on it. Come on, get it going.
It writes itself.
Totally.
Hey, Tyler, so are you heading out on the road? Yeah. What's going on next?
I was about to ask the same thing. Yeah, what's
flying
next?
Out August 1st to do rehearsals. That's right.
Where?
In Nashville.
Oh, okay.
In Nashville there, I think the only rehearsal spot everyone goes to. I don't know. It seems to be the same spot we go to.
Soundcheck or SIR?
Soundcheck, I think.
We jammed there. Fitz. Oh, no, you weren't there. You know why I jammed there? Because Shane Gallus was playing drums at the friggin'... at the Ryman. Shane's first gig was playing at the Ryman Theater.
I got fucked, Tyler. Wow. I didn't get to play the Ryman. Yeah. My eye fell out.
Wow.
And,
that's right.
I mean,
what's with Took? Didn't your eyeball fall out on a plane? Fitzy's multiple times.
Yeah. It's,
what's going on over there?
It's a high
contact. The hair flips.
It's a high contact gig. Yeah. There's a lot of,
it is. It's got to be the headbanging stuff.
It's the hair flips.
No, the doctors nobody's will better. Tell you different.
It's funny how many people ask that, though. They're like, so you guys are headbanging? It's like, no, it's, you know, it's hereditary. Or, I mean, it's a genetic. It's
actually genetic.
It's a hard G on there. Well, are you guys hard? Are you guys headbanging?
Banging?
It's a hard G, right? I know what happened. You guys were out on
singing?
The stage there.
Singing,
headbanging and singing.
Are you going to be singing that
rock
song?
And roll.
I like that song.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah,
awesome. So rehearsals in Nashville, and then what?
On the road again.
Shows. Yeah, I mean, we don't have a full tour until the fall. There's like six shows in August, and I think there's a handful in September, and then October starts like a 6-week run. It's us with 10 years. And I think Corey, you know, the Canadian kid, Corey Marks is on some of those dates.
Yeah,
country
great.
Kid.
See a cross between Corey Hart and Richard Marks? Because I think that'd be really cool.
He's their child.
Yeah. They're both made up of the DNA. He's made up of the DNA of Richard Marks and Corey Hart. Wow.
Actually, let's just mention that Corey's current hit has you on it.
Blame it on Devil. That's right. Yeah. And you know who produced that track?
Mr. Kevin Churko.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
that was a lot of fun. That was actually the first time I ever worked with Kevin. Actually, ever did. I mean, I just recorded it here and then sent it to him. And he slapped all the magic on it.
That's the best way to work, isn't it? Just like work at your house and let me just.
Well, you're self-contained there, right?
And go.
You could do most of a record at your house.
Yeah, you can do the whole record here. I mean, I do have the one of the best keyboards of all time.
Is that a Juno 6?
Juno 60.
60, yeah. Okay, cool.
Oh, classic. Dude, it's phenomenal. And it's actually got the arpeggiator in it that you can hook up to Pro Tools and I haven't done
really?
It.
Really?
Wow. Can you play the Final Countdown on it?
The total Duran Duran Nick Rhodes.
Hold on. Let me just find the patch. But I mean, it's. I was talking to Howard Benson, who he gifted me this Continental. It's a Vox Continental.
Oh, those are cool.
Nice. Yeah, those are cool too.
Yeah, yeah, right. Where on. Is it? Right there. See yep, the right. Behind there. He gifted me a Vox Continental, and
The Doors, it's mono.
It's the Doors. Mm. That's the Ray Manzarek. That's he brought that on tour for a bit. He said Ray Manzarek, but then it goes out of tune so much. Like I'll plug it in one day, and the next day I'll turn it on, and you're like, it's so out of tune. You have to everything. You just turn the screwdriver. But he came over and he's like, dude, Juno 60. I'm like, yeah. He's like, that is the best synthesizer of all time. Like really? He's like, it just sits in tracks. So you just play it in a track, and it's just like, oh, it just sits in there perfectly. It does. You just put it. I just put some pads in there, and it's just phenomenal. So there you go.
That's, what year are we talking about? That would be like 1983? What?
It's all over the 80s.
I don't know.
Yeah. Early 80s?
Yeah.
But was the Jupiter after that? Or the?
It's like the wood, the fake wood. You know?
Yeah, it was like a Volkswagen or something.
I have the other, the Rock is
over the there on your left-hand side. Oh, Wizards.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Marshalls.
Oh, you do have a Wizard. Cool.
The Wizard is, that's AC/DC. What does AC/DC sound like? Let me turn this on. That's it.
Here it is. It went on the road. Are you guys ready for this?
As AC/DC's guitar tech for years.
The Juno 60 was made between 82 and 84, it says.
Okay.
You're bang on. Didn't you say, Corey, didn't you say 83 or something?
I said
83. I said 83, yeah.
Oh. It just reminds me of that particular era, you know, like that thing.
Yeah.
At the time, it was revolutionary.
Mm-hmm. But the thing, which sucks about these old keyboards is that everything sounds amazing, and then if you turn it off and turn it on again, and you touch one thing, it resets. It goes back to like, and you're like, no, and you lost, because you can't save anything. It's all just like, you're just pushing these fader things until you get like this cool sub-synth thing, like that's awesome. And then if you turn your thing off and turn it on again, you touch it, it resets, and you're like, and you will never find it again.
So quick question, when you switched, because obviously you did a lot of records at Bay 7 in the valley there with Howard Benson, and then you completely go over the pond to the UK for a completely different experience for a couple times now. How has that been?
So I mean, everything sounds different, because I don't know if it's the voltage, because the voltage is different over there, but definitely everything sounds like, just sounds like, I don't know how to describe it, just like England, I don't know, but everything sounds different. The guitars just sound different. Just when your stuff comes out of the speakers, when you're tracking, you're like, it just sounds cooler. It sounds, I don't know how to describe it. It just sounds, I don't know. But the process was so different. The Martin Tereffi, who produced the last two records, he is a feel guy, a vibe guy. He's won a bunch of Grammys, and he's done a bunch of massive records like Train.
Yeah.
He did all of the Jason Mraz and,
nice.
He did a lot of these guys. So he wanted us to all be in a room together, and then he just pushes record. And he literally, I'd have an SM7, I'd be playing piano and hitting bum notes. And he's like, I like that. He's a Swedish guy. He's like, I like that. I want to keep, Tyler, I want to keep some of those vocals. I'm like, no. I want to re-record them. He's like, no, I'd really like to keep. He loves keeping everything, just the vibe, right?
Yeah,
in the room. So we had to really kind of like talk him out of like certain things. Like someone like, I hit a bum note, he'd be like, it's fine, and just leave it in there. So it was really
there's a lot of guys like that who like let's, it sounds like a cool vibe, you know, you're like, but it's the wrong note. You can't help it.
Yeah. And then you don't hear it. We don't hear it. Someone hits something. Right. I don't hear it. I hit some bum note on the piano, and then we just, you listen to it. I'm like, I don't hear it. It's like, well, yeah, cause it's just, it's in the pocket, I guess, you know. Magic, there's no, we did a lot of stuff off the grid, which, was interesting, you know, where we wouldn't be comping drums and then having some editor snap everything to a grid. And then of course, then all the guitars sound like shit. And you know, it was just, you would just record it and that is it. It's like, cool, wow, isn't that how you're supposed to do that? It's like, well, and they go,
it was, yeah, it was a lot.
It was.
Yeah.
Now it's cut and paste. Clearly,
I think it's pretty impressive because the last couple records do sound different. We're talking style wise from what in, you know, the evolution of, I think you guys, and I remember drummer Joe, saying to me, this new stuff's really going to sound different. And he played me that, I think it was the last record or maybe the record before. And he was like, what do you think? And I remember telling him specifically, I said, but these are really good songs. And I think this whole sound is great. Like, and I know where some of your influences are, Tyler, with Coldplay and some of those great, you know, big pop type, you know, I remember seeing Coldplay a couple of years ago, by the way. I don't know if you've seen them live, but it was one of the fucking best concerts I'd ever seen from a band I probably never paid attention to. And I'm like, I get it. This is stadium sized, really well-crafted songs with a great band and great British, that whole production and that sound. And, but anyway, Joe had said, I don't, you know, what do you think? You know, just asking friend to friend. And I go, I think it's going to be a huge hit. It's going to be really strong. And hence, I'm driving around Vegas and all those songs have translated really well on radio. I hear them all the time.
Yeah. Oh yeah. RX was our biggest hit we ever had on our sixth album.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. That was, we didn't know.
Yeah, no, I know. Tour. It's great. And, but I think you're still, are you able to tour? This is the same tour. Like the last record you did, you didn't really, like none of us got to finish what we started back in 2020. So this is going to be the continuation of that tour, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's, we haven't played in a year and a half, but I jammed the songs a few days ago and I'm like, yeah, it just all comes back to you. Like, almost like hilariously, it's like, I'm not going to remember anything. I was talking to Dave the other day and he was kind of like, you know, almost getting into like, you know, getting stressed out. Like, I'm so busy. I gotta start working on these songs. I'm like, dude, I'm telling you, you don't to see it in Nashville. Don't even practice them. You don't need to. Like, as soon as you pick up the guitar, it's there. It's just there. Right.
It's muscle weird. Memory. Yeah.
It's muscle memory. Yeah. You know? I mean, I'll forget some lyrics for sure on the first show. I'll be,
Are you teleprompter guy yet? It's okay if you are.
No, I started doing some.
Everybody else
I started
is
taking some weed though. I started doing the THC. I'm a druggie. Drug user. I never took it. I never get anxiety. It's a weird thing. I was talking to someone. They're like, do you ever get nervous when you go on stage? I'm like, nope. Like I don't. I could like be like this, and then my heart's not even elevated. It's a weird thing, but. I thought I would start taking this CBD, and I'm like, this doesn't do jack shit. And then I would, and then I got the CBD with the THC in Vancouver. I'm like, now we're talking.
Yeah.
So I go on stage and I'm like, I'm just having the greatest time of my life. But it does. There's some memory things. I started noticing. I start forgetting lyrics. So you got to be careful. But I never started taking it because I would get like nervous. I was just like, I want to be like to go on stage like with a little bit of a high, and it's awesome.
I bet.
It's interesting. Great. Yeah. I'm like, this is great. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah. So you guys are, that's happening right away. We're all, it looks, so, sounds like
back,
we're all getting
back at it. Yeah.
Getting back at it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm about 10 days from flying out. So I already like changed my seats. I'm full, like, I've already written down my toiletries I have to go get. Like, I have a nice shaving cream. Got to get some, you know, I make sure I have the soap container, you know, flat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know how it is. Got to make sure of all that stuff in your bathroom bag. I'm getting excited. Like, I'm just so excited now.
Did you actually unpack your luggage, like, over the last year? Because a lot of people, we always have a packed bag or something, you know, like, that's just, you never really put your stuff away.
Yeah. I've got stuff here. Dean shipped me something that's here. I don't know if he's going to want me to fly out with it, but I guess it was because of COVID. Maybe he was worried about getting it across the border or something. So I've got some package. I think it's a drum head. I think the drummer from Blind Melon is an artist. Does this make sense?
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah. I think he does, and I think Dean bought one of his drum heads. It's in my house in a box.
Cool. So, okay, cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, I'm a weirdo. I'm totally a guy, like, when I get home from tour, I unpack everything. The first thing I do before it's, I'm a weirdo.
I kind of do, too, yeah. I don't usually have, Fitz actually has, like, bags ready to go, like he's a I don't know.
Because I forget shit. I get mad, I have, like, an entire toiletry bag that matches my whatever I have it, you know, in the house. I don't know. I'm just kind of that way. Too many different gigs. That's the problem. Because I mean, I've been playing with you know, five artists at a time sometimes, and you just got to have a bag ready to go. That's just my thing. Hey, I played this past weekend.
What's in the bag? I just got
home 2 days ago. What do you mean?
Because everything you can get on the road. Like I'm the same way. Like, you got pack everything in your bag. But then what is the one thing you go out there and you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe I forgot my blank. I mean, you could buy everything on the road. Is there something where, like, you need to have, like,
just, you know, smaller size
in the bunk?
Little things, you know, like the stuff that fits in your little toiletry bag. If you forget your... Right. Your, I don't know, shaving cream or something. I like the small one that fits in the smaller. You know, I don't know. I'm just that way. Don't forget your contacts. Right. Hey, Karen. That's right.
Karen Hunter, what's up, baby?
My friend Karen, I'll see her in Edmonton in a couple of weeks because we actually have a gig coming up in Edmonton. So that's exciting.
Oh. There you go. Nice. Right. Yeah, because now we all have, like, stuff on the road. So, like, I forget. I'll bring stuff on the road, and I've realized it's a lot easier to go when you get out on tour. You have, like, a dress room case, and then we also have, like, stuff that we bring on the bus. So I'll have, like, a box of, it'll say Tyler's things on it. I'll never bring them home because it's just, like, such a waste to cart. So it'd be, like, things like I have a little mini humidifier that plugs in, you know, in the bus, in the bunk, and it's, like, this big, and it lasts, I think, like, 2 or 3 hours of water.
Yeah,
but dude, like, little things like that, you know, little tray, a suction cup in your bunk where you put your phone in there, the charger, little things like that. You leave all those on the road, right? When you don't bring those home, right?
No,
but they'll stay somewhere on the truck or somewhere. So I'm looking forward to, like, wondering what crap I have out there.
Separate phone charger. I have a charger at home or all this electronic crap, but I have, like, matching stuff, and I don't use black cables because I lose them in hotel rooms. So I always go for white cables.
Oh, that's really?
Good idea.
Okay. Good tip.
Yeah.
Great tip.
Yeah.
Road tips.
But that's what it is.
Sorry.
Yeah. Fitzy's got weird white cables. How do you even get a charger that's white?
Weird white cables.
Not weird, just white cables. Weird white cables.
Cables on. Get it all on Amazon.
Amazon, there you go. I'm not familiar with that. What's that? Just kidding.
Well, it's an astronaut owns it.
Oh, he did his
mission. It's only like the mission's not very long, right? He just kind of, like, touches what?
It doesn't take
weightlessness, and then they come back.
It doesn't take very long to get to outer space. I mean, you know, you need a rocket or whatever, but yeah, it doesn't take, I think it takes, like,
what is it? I can't, 54 miles or how tall, how high up is it?
It's surprisingly close. That's all I know, is it wouldn't take that long just to kind of go up. You're in space. And then, like, did they do any sort of orbiting, or did they just kind of, like, went up there and went, like, cool, and then went back down or what?
I think so. I just saw the landing. It's pretty,
but it's kind of funny how, like, well, I mean, there's a lot of things to say about it. I mean, I suppose if any of us had the money, we'd probably be like, yeah, sure, let's go. I'll go. Let's go to space.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a weird thing to do.
But who's going to be the first band to jam in space?
Play a gig in space.
Just floating around. The singer's just like, bass player's trying to roll, flip around, trying to not hit it. That'd be great. Well, this is where we're at, guys. This is where we got to in this podcast.
we've hit the basement now. Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot for the time today, Tyler.
Yeah, Tyler, you're the best. I can't wait to
enjoy having you on here. We kept you long enough.
Yes.
And
that's fine. I can reunite. Tomorrow. It's cool. No. I need to lean out anyways, guys. 4 hours. That's a record.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. That was great. Great catching up.
We'll do it again.
Yeah. Yeah,
100%. Ask me anytime.
We'll cross paths on the road, hopefully. That'll be nice for us all to.
Yes. Well, I should get out to LA to see Corey one day, or Woodland Hills. It's just too far.
Yeah, it's your neighbors. Okay. I didn't know we were neighbors, so we should go for
coffee. Are you guys, like a half hour 100%. Apart? I mean, a good time of day?
Yep.
Half an hour?
We almost hooked up, Tyler, last week when we were, the two guys, we were all in LA frantically. We kind of like two-day video shot, and then Todd and I actually, we're so good at getting back and forth from Vegas now. We know, if we leave at night, it's better than leaving, during, traffic and morning and that. So we shot all day, and then we already had come back, and we were going to go do coffee the next day, and then you were going to golf. So
that's right. I remember I hit you guys up, and I'm like, hey guys, I just got us a booth.
Hey, I'm still here.
You say, what did you want? The latte? What did you? And you're like, yeah.
We're like
Vegas. Like,
you have good coffee by your house, though. That commissary place.
We're already in Barstow, and you're like, hey, I'm still sitting here. It's been 2 hours. That guy.
You're in Baker. Yeah. good shit. Sweet. All right.
Well, thanks, Tyler, for hanging again. With us.
Thanks to everybody who tuned in today. We had a good audience for the whole time, which is awesome.
August 10th, new single will be out audio-wise. Yep. Is the video coming out the same day, or you want to put the video out a little later?
That's the intention.
Everything's coming out the same day. So. Okay. There you go. That's the intent.
And it's a Tuk Talk day, so we'll do it on Tuk Talk.
Booyah. There you go.
So, Tyler, say hi to Dean, Dave, and Joe. I'll probably see Joe this week for coffee.
I see Joe next week, I think. We're going to go get some food. There you go. Joe is like the man about town now. He's the Vegas guy.
He's rolling
around in his fancy Tesla, thinking he's so great. I love him to death.
That son of a bitch.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right.
Sweet.
All right, lads.
All right guys. Okay.
See you next Tuesday.
Hey, guys.
Big love.
Hey, guys. Take care.
Tuk Talk Tuesday.
Tuk Talk Tuesday.